As we head into the second week of firearms deer season in Michigan, current state's Melissa Benmark has been thinking about two groups of people, hunters and high-end chefs, that might not seem to have a lot in common, but do share a common respect for the animals they use for food. She spoke with one of Michigan's noted chefs about nose-to-tail eating and what this new old trend has in common with Michigan's long-lasting hunting tradition.
My name is Chef Brian Paulson. I own the Forest Grill in Birmingham, Michigan. I'm also a full-time culinary instructor at Schoolcraft College, where I specialize in charcuterie, which is the art of preserving food before the refrigerator. I also written two books on the subject, both bestsellers. One's called Charcuterie, and the other one's called Salumi, which is, charcuterie is the French version, and salumi is the Italian version. Father of five, married 31 years to the same woman, which is unusual for chefs.
For those of us who don't know the term, tell us about a little bit about what the nose-to-tail movement is.
Well, it's about respecting the animal. For years and years and years, everybody wanted to use the middle meats because they're tender, right? You know, the strip loin, the steaks, the prime rib on beef animals, or the loin and belly on the pig and so on. And it's just respecting all parts of the animal. And a talented cook, for instance, looking at a pig, right, to cut a nice chop out of the center and cook it perfectly, it takes a certain amount of skill. But take the trotter, or take the tail, take the nose, take the ears, and turn them into beautiful, fantastically delicious food is far more talent than just grilling something off. So the second part of that is that as chefs, I think we're responsible to ensure that the quality of ingredients that we get is fantastic, because one of the secrets of great cooking starts with the ingredients. So if we start with factory-raised, hormone-injected, steroid-infested food, we're doing a disservice to our customers. So we have to create, as chefs, create a demand for small family farms to raise wholesome animals and that they can make a living at. And it's a difficult process, but it's happening, because this whole movement, chefs are now buying whole half animals and butchering themselves, and you pay for the entire animal. So you have to utilize it, because utilization equals profitability in the restaurant business. And it's a respect. We should really know where our food comes from and how to treat all parts of the animal. Thank God we're higher on the food chain.
I understand that some people are even embracing their own butchering with an eye toward, like you said, humanely raised animals, sustainable animals. Witness pig stock in Traverse City recently. What kind of turnout did you have for that? What kind of people?
Oh, it was fantastic. This is the fifth year I've done it, and I do it in conjunction with a master butcher from Vienna, Austria. His name is Christoph Wiesner. And we show the chefs that meat doesn't have to come from a box, or it shouldn't come from a little styrofoam tray wrapped in plastic. And we actually knock down pigs, dehair them, eviscerate them, and cook all parts of the animal, the heart, lungs, spleen, the bladder, the intestines for sausage, the blood. And then, of course, I butcher with Christoph four different animals. And pig stock is centered around the breed of Mangalista, which was almost extinct 15 years ago.
Aren't those hairy pigs?
Yeah, the woolly pigs are called. They look like big sheep, and they're so kind and gentle. They're just wonderful animals. So I cut a Mangalista, a Berkshire, a Duroc, and then a factory pig, factory farm, grocery store style pig. And we laid all four carcasses side by side. And, you know, 100% of the chefs could identify one animal, which was the factory pig, which was a lean, sickly-looking, pale, pigmented meat. It just looked terrible. And you work your way up by different heritage breeds. And I point out to them that not every chef can buy a whole animal. They might not have the space in their kitchen. They might have the skill set. They might not have the room in the walk-in. But they can buy USDA cuts. And I showed them where the European cuts are as part of it. And I also showed them the difference in the breeds, the intramuscular fat, which is commonly referred to as marbling. And fat is flavor. Fat is our friend. And we love fat. Okay. So it's important that they understand that the ingredients that they start with is directly related to the success of the plates that they serve their customers. And also, they have a great responsibility, like I said, to buy wholesome food so there are family farms that can survive, because a factory pig costs 95 cents a pound and the Mangalista costs $5 a pound hanging weight. So you can see this, five times the price, but it takes three times as long to raise a wholesome animal than it does a factory pig. So this is the revolution that's going on. And the nose-to-tail cooking is directly related to the fact that if you're buying a whole carcass, you're paying the same price for the nose as you are for the prime rib. You see?
Right.
So
right.
You better utilize it because you can't waste. Out of respect as chefs, we don't waste food, but food equals money.
Right.
You can't waste it.
Do you see people that are not chefs, people who are just cooking for themselves, kind of embracing this idea of trying to actually know where their meat comes from and even maybe experience, you know, that it isn't the easiest thing to kill a living animal? I mean, do you see home chefs kind of starting to embrace this movement?
I do. And it's a revolution. It's fantastic. I do cooking classes in my restaurant Saturday mornings, you know, periodically. And during one class, I said, what would you guys like to see me do next class? And they said, I want to see you cut a pig. So it was amazing. I sold a class, 25 just serious home cooks. They wanted to know where the meat came from. I had the farmer who dropped off the pig talk about how the pig was raised. She even told the name of the pig, which a couple people got squeamish about.
Yeah, but, sure, yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, that's going a little bit too far. But, you know, people do want to know where their food comes from.
Well, I guess part of the reason I wanted to do this interview with you, especially right now as we're in the firearms deer season here in Michigan, is that you've got kind of these two groups of people that you can sort of imagine might be a little suspicious of each other. You've got sort of the, you know, Chicago and Detroit foodie people who are interested in these hogs that are, you know, of a heritage breed and, you know, where they come from and how the butchering is done. And then you have all these guys who have hunted deer all their life going out and you know, essentially knowing where their food comes from. And I wondered, you know, I just got thinking, I wonder if there is or if there is starting to be any crossover or any more understanding between those two groups of people.
I think there is. And the reason I think that is because I get emails all the time. And people are hunter. I never meet these people. They email me and they'll say, I'm a deer hunter. Can I make a prosciutto out of venison? And, you know, I give them a recipe. You can do that. I tell them what to look for, you know, food safety, of course, all those things. But, yes, I mean, it can be done. I get more and more people that are hunters that really care about the animal, whereas maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago, it was the thrill of the kill, and that's all they did. And they got the big horns mounted on the wall, and they sent their meat to the processor, and it all got ground into hamburger. And
right.
That's sacrilegious. Now, I mean, Chef Milos, my mentor from the Golden Mushroom, master chef, he's an avid hunter, and he produced a series of videos on how to age the deer, how to handle the meat, how to butcher it properly, what cuts are best for what type of cooking. It's very important. I've got a neighbor who's a big hunter, and the last 3 years in a row, I butchered his deer for him at his house, and I cut it and showed him, these are roasts. He goes, he would take the back straps out, and then everything else would be ground. And that's ridiculous. So now he's making roasts. He even did a neck roast. He sends me a picture of it. I mean, he's cooking, whereas the previous generation of hunter probably didn't even think about it. But, you know, sure, he doesn't read the New York Times, but, you know, he's aware of the food revolution that's going on in this country.
Do you think Michigan is a particularly fertile place for it? Because even those of us who grew up in the city, you know, in my case, I married a guy who is a lifelong hunter, and we all know someone who hunts. So do you think that this is somewhat fertile ground for there to be some cross-fertilization of ideas?
I do. I think hunters in their soul really are thinking about food because men are foragers, right? And the part of their that we the men need to provide, right? So every hunter doesn't want to waste the food, and they just don't know what to do with it. That's the thing. I mean, there's plenty of hunters that I know, that customers of mine that go out to Iowa and they partridge hunt, and they come back with a dozen birds, and they're frozen, and they put them in their freezer, and their wives won't touch them.
What do you believe the next step or the next kind of trend will be in terms of people thinking about their food supply and where it comes from and how they treat it?
Well, I think there's two parts to that. I think that it starts with chefs, serious chefs and cooks. You see more and more breed-specific items and where the food comes from, you know, like even fish and seafood, you know, George's Bank sea scallops or Upland Farms zucchini. You know, you'll see this terminology on menus, which is very important, which intrigues the consumer. The next thing I see is farmers markets. I mean, it's just amazing to me. You know, I ride a motorcycle, and I always take back roads, and you go to these little towns all over the country, and there's always a farmer's market. And it's interesting is that I've been to Europe extensively, and every small town in Europe, like Wednesdays and Saturdays are the market days. And all the farmers from around the small village will bring their stuff into town and they sell it. We're seeing that more and more and more in America. I mean, you got these small farmers that are raising chickens or zucchini or tomatoes or corn or whatever. And I think people really find it as a food experience to visit the market to see where their food comes from and then take it home and actually cook it, because there's an attachment to it. When you buy it at the grocery store, you buy shucked corn already at the grocery store, for instance, and it's wrapped in the plastic, and you bring it home and put it in the refrigerator. Already the sugars are turning to starch. You don't know when it was picked. You know, you go to the farmer's market, the corn is there in the husk. You take it home and cook it and eat it that day. I mean, it only takes like 24 hours for the sugars to start to turn to starch. But that corn is so sweet. People remember those things.
Well, Chef Brian Paulson, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.